Hello and welcome to the last Texas Tribune Tribcast before Election Day 2010. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and Editor-in-Chief Evan Smith.
I'm just depressed at that whole thing. What are we going to talk about?
It's sad.
There's nothing going on here.
Can we do like Breaking Bad episode recaps?
Yes, actually? I'm up for that.
All right, sorry to interrupt your introductions. Go ahead.
And managing editor Ross Ramsey's here.
Hi.
And sitting in for Ben Philpott, we have young Reeve Hamilton.
Hello.
You've thrown him off. He's now going to stink the whole podcast. He's so self-conscious already.
Well, since the wheels have already come off, I'm not even sure it's worth mentioning.
Can't
our
they just
four
push Election
today?
Day four more months? I want more of this, please, right now.
We're going to talk a little bit about the final sprint here. Our latest poll results, the eight-day out reports that came out this week, and possibly make some predictions if we feel so inclined.
I think the prediction part is going to be my favorite part of this podcast.
Well, Evan, let's kind of look back on this past year, primary and general.
We need one of those montages with sort of cheesy music, you know, with Rick Perry and Bill White hand in hand running down the beach barefoot.
So this is what $100 million looks like.
Boy, I mean, talk about out with a whimper and not a bang. Of course, no election is over until Election Day, but I will tell you that the momentum heading toward Tuesday is more about let's just end this thing already. There's not a whole lot of drama. I think all of us in this business, we're fight promoters, we're not journalists, we want action. And really, we want drama more than action. And we hoped in the primary for drama, and we got to the end and realized there was no there.
But there was Farouk.
Well, there was Farouk, and he was on fire. But
he made a brief cameo in the final
general.
Very, very brief.
Right.
Very brief.
Well, that's what a cameo is.
It's like now when if you watch Project Runway, it's when like you know down toward the end, just they bring Casanova. Well, nobody cares about this.
Nobody knows what you're talking about.
Actually.
Project what?
Project Runway.
My sister watches that show.
But look, Project Runway. Was that an insult? Project Runway is, in fact, in some respects, a more interesting show than the campaign has been, with more natural drama, actually. But the point on this is that the drama is the no drama, basically. That what's happening as we get toward the end here is that the race has really been stuck in neutral for a while, at least if you believe the polls. Now, there could be the silent majority on either side that's going to turn the results out. You know, to turn the results on their head, but we don't know.
Part of this is the narrative got set in late August, early September. It was this Republican wave narrative, and this is a national story, and it's sort of been, and nothing's really knocked it off beam. I mean, there have been some variations of the Republicans peaked too early. Are they going to peak later? What's the Tea Party going to do? There's all these little subtext stories, but the main story is sort of known. Obama's having a bad mid-year election. And Texas is just a component of that.
So you buy the argument made by Perry and his folks that at the end of the day, the framing device for this election is Obama. That's what it is.
I do. It's showing up in all of our polls. It's showing up in everybody else's polls. It's like, you know, if you ask them, what do you think are the most important issues, they all sort of frame up as federal issues. In our poll, the most important issues on a national level were what you expect. Economy, unemployment, jobs, federal deficit, all financial stuff. We're in a recession or depression or whatever you want to call it, and that makes sense. If you ask them about the same things on the state level, they say border security and immigration, which are basically federal issues. And Perry's used those things as pivots to talk past Bill White and to talk about, you know, this is sort of Perry's framed this as me and us in Texas against Washington. It worked particularly well against Kay because she was actually from Washington. And now Bill White's sort of getting washed away in it.
I want to know from any of you what could have happened differently.
Well, Bill White sort of tried to have that October surprise with the teachers' retirement systems, which I guess didn't pan out as the sort of big game changer maybe they were hoping.
It hasn't been the big game changer yet. We get three or four or five days left.
It's hard for people to, the average person, to understand.
Yeah, you start talking about pensions. I mean.
Well, it's not that. I think.
To say that it is not potentially a legitimate issue.
Sure.
It's just hard for people to get their hands around.
Part of this is the credibility of a candidate goes down as the duress increases. As you get closer to the election, your ability to sell a story goes down. So if you're Bill White or, you know, Mortimer Snerd and it's May and the election's not till November and you say, hey, I think people ought to start poking at this story, it might get some legs on it and you have some credibility. If it's two days before the election and you're behind and you say, hey, has anybody looked at this? That's just a desperate move, and your credibility is down.
Even if it isn't, it smacks
even if,
of being
even if it's a big deal.
Which reminds me of those few weeks, I guess, in May or in March and April when we were sitting around talking about whether White should have gotten out earlier to define Perry while Perry was still involved in what possibly could have been a runoff, you know. And it was pretty quiet there, I guess, right after White clinched the primary. So would that have made a difference, you know, had he come out earlier? And
well, the argument was that maybe people were not paying attention.
Well, the question here is, did White have an opportunity to change the subject? If the subject is Obama, and if the year is this kind of a year all over the country and in Texas, did White have an opportunity in this race to change the subject, to deflect some of that, to get people thinking about Rick Perry instead of Barack Obama? I don't know that he did, frankly. If he did, he certainly didn't take the opportunity, but I'm not sure you could have pulled that one off.
Interestingly, I think the way this turned out is neither candidate wanted this race to be about Bill White. Perry wanted the race to be about Barack Obama. White wanted the race to be about Rick Perry. Perry was more successful at making the race about Barack Obama than White was about making the race about Rick Perry.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we said many times together that if this race is conducted as a referendum on Rick Perry, White has a chance. If it's conducted as a referendum on Bill White, he has no chance.
Right.
Because it's a hard thing to get an incumbent fired unless you give people a reason, a bill of particulars.
White kind of ran a version of the same race, at least thematically, that Kay Hutchison ran. I mean, they're you know, all the blocking and tackling was different, but he was going at the same thing Hutchison was. It's this sort of disdain for Rick Perry, and you know they're going to run on disdain for Rick Perry. And that didn't sell this year, or hasn't sold this year. Boy, are we going to look stupid when White wins next week.
There was a moment, though, where
I'm not calling this race.
The governors were getting the Democratic governors were getting involved, and polls were tightening. But it just seems that in those last couple of weeks, all the polls have fallen.
And look, we as an institution, the media, can completely blow this race. I mean, it's possible that we're just not seeing something that's there.
Right. Hillary was winning Iowa.
Yeah,
according to the latest polls.
Yeah, there's a million versions of that.
White is no Obama,
right.
Except Perry thinks he is. But
the problem Bill White appears to have a week before the election is that he hasn't been ahead in a poll since the primaries, or since right after the primaries.
Yeah, I'm even having a hard time remembering that, but
right.
I guess you're right.
One PPP had it tied
Right. And there was a allegedly third-party poll in the summer that had it close to tied. But he's been behind in the polls all along. More importantly, there's not sort of when you talk to voters and you talk to political professionals and all of these people and say, you know, what's the rationale for a White win? Nobody really has one. And usually if you have something creeping up like Hillary in Iowa or, you know, Bill Clements against Mark White or Reagan against Carter, there's some rationale. I think there's something here going on, and I don't really hear that talk.
Well, the other thing I'm thinking as you say this with regard to the polls, again, polls are not ultimately, as Elise reminds us all the time, polls don't matter. But remember after the primary or at the very end of the primary, Jim Henson graphed for us all the polls in the Republican primary race. We have been saying all along, we've asserted all along, this is a competitive primary. And you graphed out all the polls, and what you saw was she wasn't ahead in one poll. Going back only to June, she was ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And since June of the previous year, every poll had been Perry ahead, and all but two polls had him ahead by double digits. We in the press pronounced this race competitive, asserted it. It was never competitive. I wonder if we're going to be having that conversation later.
Well, I think
that when you graph out all the polls, what you'll find is that Perry really pretty much always had this. He was always ahead of this race,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, where it's been fairly even is in the money race. We saw White, which is a good opportunity to talk about these 8-day-out reports, because White, we noted last time on the 30-day-out report, spent something like, $14 million?
Right. He pre-bought his television and other advertising.
And this time we've seen Perry in the last month. These 8-day-out reports are the final campaign finance numbers that we'll see pre-election day.
Perry raised quite a lot of money in this last month.
He raised quite a lot of money. More importantly, he spent $16 million in the last 30 days.
Right. And meanwhile, Dewhurst and Abbott also spent $3 million each. Did they need to spend that much money when we start talking about the other statewide?
Well, they're not behind. On the other hand, you know, they could be ginning up turnout for people on the ballot below them.
Well, and you never assume. You know, if you're a statewide official in Texas, this is just a perennial. If you're a statewide official in Texas and you're not the governor, when people go out and poll and say, what's the name ID for this one or this one or this one, you could have been on the ballot for years and years and your name ID is not above 20%. You can't assume you're going to win just because you're a Republican, just because you're an incumbent. If you're Greg Abbott and you're sitting on $11 million, there's no reason not to do some TV advertising and just make sure, oh, yeah, remember me.
And Reeve loves that TV ad of his. We enjoyed that.
I love all TV ads.
We enjoyed the Abbott and the Todd Staples one where he's on the horse and he stops by the gas station. Mm-hmm. Have you seen this mm-hmm. one?
Well, you know, but the thing is, remember that this is not only about 2010. You know, you've got in the case of Dewhurst, Abbott, and Staples, three statewide Republicans who believe that their future is bright.
Right.
And, you know, in the case of Dewhurst and Abbott, you may be looking at the mano a mano race for the gubernatorial nomination in 2014.
Right.
Staples is looking above him and thinking, well, there are a bunch of different opportunities. Staples might want to be governor someday, might want to be lieutenant governor. Remember, he was senator statewide before he was commissioner statewide. Fact is, all these guys have ambitions and aspirations, and if they can afford to spend a little bit of money on feel-good advertising just to remind people that they're around, why not do it?
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's at least partly what this is about. I think the money stuff is fascinating just because, you know, so Ramsey reported actually today in the Tribune, Wednesday in the Tribune, $43 million raised in that last month.
In that last month, right.
In a cycle in which, quite honestly, there are only a handful of competitive races.
Yeah,
it's really amazing.
You know, there are about a dozen House races. You know, one of the questions that we'll find out the answer to on Tuesday is how strong this Republican surge everybody's talking about really is. You know, there's a bunch of House races, and it's like, you know, if you sort of qualify them, you can say these races, these guys were always going to be in trouble. These are competitive districts. This next set of people, this is like 50-year flood zone. You know, they're probably okay, but if it's a really bad year, and then 100-year flood. And if this is a 100-year flood, if this is a real Republican wave like 94, the Republicans could pick up 8 or 9 seats. I don't think they will. But
they could.
But they could. And the money looks like – the money is really interesting. The Republicans are making a bid for some seats you would not have assumed they would make a bid for. The one – the obvious one is in Waco. Jim Dunham, who's the head – was the former head of the House Democratic Caucus. He's, you know, sort of the leading Democrat without title now in the House.
Boy, he better hope that the turnout for Chet Edwards is high and that they carry him along.
Those two overlap. Boy. Chet Edwards, of course, is the one of the targeted national races. And the Republicans have put $578,000 in the last 30 days into the campaign of one Marva Beck of Centerville, Texas.
Running against Jim Dunham.
Who's running against Jim Dunham. So
is it nuisance spending?
That's a lot.
That's
a lot bigger than nuisance spending.
What do they know?
Maybe she can upgrade from her Mini Cooper.
She's been tooling around in a Mini Cooper
and doing parades on a Segway.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's actually very
in Waco.
Interesting. Yeah, right.
This is a wonderful country.
Yeah. The Segways aren't cheap.
No, Segways are not cheap. But you just always look like a spaz, though. On them, I'm convinced.
somebody rent me a Segway.
The Jason Isaac race, which you and I were talking about, Ross, before the podcast. You know, that continues to be a race in which an awful lot of money is being spent.
This is the Republican running against Patrick Rose in Dripping Springs, just southwest of Dallas. Rose has, you know, while his guys have been calling and saying, you know, this shouldn't be on your list of very, very close races, Rose has been spent $700,000 in this not very close race. Jason Isaac raised enough money to put up $431,000 in spending in the last 31 days. This is a big TV race.
Well, yeah,
this
they're advertising all over to haul that couch out into the middle of a field so he can shoot
right on the mailer. That's exactly
the cost
right.
on that one was enormous.
And Patrick Rose's ads are not the feel-good ads of the Greg Abbotts and Todd Staples.
Absolutely not.
Mean.
And they're spending money.
So are the Isaac ads. Yeah.
That's true. I mean, this is very nasty. We're here in the Central Texas media market in Austin, and we're seeing these ads. They're buying during NFL football. Not cheap, you know, Monday Night Football stuff, and spending a ton of money during newscasts. I can't get through a television newscast in Austin without seeing both Isaac
and Rose
targeting one another.
Well,
but I'll tell you, so here's a place we don't live where I'm curious to see. I thought the numbers in the how many times have you seen in Paris, Texas, as much money spent on both sides as you see spent by Homer and Kane?
So somebody told me that, you know, in this district, that's, you know, it's an East Texas district, Sulphur Springs, Paris. Mm-hmm. Somebody told me, you know, we're spending $10,000 on radio. And I said, is $10,000 on radio a lot? And he said, that's wall-to-wall radio in this part of East Texas.
Oh,
a dollar
God.
A holler. It's, you know.
It's a very, very tough race.
And it's a smash-mouth race.
The race that the Democrats put up against Kane with Kane's brother-in-law? Is that
Kane's former brother-in-law did a deposition testifying that Kane, as a young man, sold drugs.
And vacuum cleaners.
And vacuum cleaners. Yes, that's right. Great moments in history.
Reba's here to tell us about Segways and vacuum cleaners.
You like that?
Well, I'm a fan of ads.
And
the vacuum cleaners and cleanliness.
And Segways.
And the ad also has a quote from Kane saying, I don't want to talk about what I did as a young man, which makes him look guilty
George,
in this life.
It didn't hurt George Bush to say that.
So, right. But this ad is running wall to wall, and we'll see. I mean, this is, you know, when campaigns make these last week nasty ads, they make this, they basically go crazy with themselves. They say, you know, this is a really powerful ad and should move voters away from the other guy, unless it's a really powerful ad that people are appalled by and move people away from us for running it. So, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, the other district where the numbers were interesting to me was Joe Moody's got significantly less money than DeMargo, which is not surprising since DeMargo has more money almost always than everybody.
But, well, right. He had less money than Margo last time. He had
right. But
Elliot Shapley, the senator, had less money than Margo the time before that.
Margo's got a significant advantage, though, on Moody here at the last minute.
And is spending more money. He spent him outspent him about 2-1. You know, at this point in the race, how much you raise is interesting. How much you spend is more interesting.
More interesting.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's a competitive race. You know, a bunch of these that have been on our map for a while remain really competitive. You know, all the liars on both sides are telling us, you know, our polls show that we're winning this race, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. I think there are still a dozen races that are really in suspense.
So
of some put kind that, or
put
another.
Just quickly, I know Elise is making that we have to move on face, but quickly, game show speed round, which are the dozen? Which are the dozen to watch between now and Tuesday?
House, I'm going to go by incumbent. Mark Homer in the House, Joe Heflin, Chris Turner, Robert Miklos, Carol Kent, Christy Thibaut, Stephen Frost, Abel Herrera, Patrick Rose, Jim Dunham, Joe Moody.
Number of Republican incumbents on that list? Zero.
Zero. Now, there's three Republican incumbents who would not be in trouble if they weren't in trouble. They have, you know, there's stuff in their opposition book. They shouldn't be in trouble. Joe Driver, who's committed some fouls on his personal finances, is probably the one in the most trouble. He's running against Jamie Doris in Garland. Doc Anderson, who's got some federal tax liens and such in Waco, running against John Mabry, a former House member. And that's another race with the Chet Edwards overlay, you know, where
Mabry is helped by a strong Edwards turnout.
Or if there's a strong turnout against Edwards, it helps Anderson. I mean, you find out on election day. That's the proofing. And then Linda Harper Brown and Irving, who won a very close race last time and would probably be fine in this election, and but for the fact that she was driving a Mercedes owned by a company where her husband worked that also had business in front of the legislature.
Which of those three is the most in trouble?
Driver.
You think so?
I would say Driver, yeah.
But we should remember, and this kind of segues well into our final topic, which is predictions, should you want to make them. We should remember that Driver's district went for McCain by 12 points over Obama in 2008.
Am I remembering it's like a 60-40 district?
Yeah, over the last 2 years, it's like a 60-40 district. If Joe Driver survives this election, it will be a tribute to redistricting. You know, he's just got a solid enough.
He's
got a
solid $18,000 to the LRB.
He's got a solid enough map, right? He's got a solid enough map that, you know, he can just look up and say, you know, you can even do that if you're a Republican and win in that district.
It's kind of amazing.
Right. Reeve, we'll let you start about
November
3rd.
At least brought
like.
Me on here just to sort of be the ringmaster for the predictions of other people.
Andy Richter of the podcast, actually.
I mean, basically, the one I'm most interested in is the Bill Flores, Chet Edwards race, as profiled in the battalion over at Texas A&M just the other day.
That was
both
that was some article.
We actually literally did dramatic readings of the. Apparently, you can tell a lot by a guy's pale white skin under
nothing,
his ring.
There's nothing more beautiful than an Aggie ring.
It's the first time we've even considered the phrase Aggie ring porn. It's just, you know, the descriptions of these rings on these two Aggie grads was something to behold.
Reeve said to me, "Did you look at the A&M battalion? Did you read the Chet Edwards porn?" And I went, "What Chet Edwards porn?" And then he just meant that it was sort of like a loving article about Chet Edwards. And I thought, I thought it was actual porn.
Matt Mikoviak is going to put the phrase Chet Edwards porn in all his ads for the last week.
Exactly. Quoted in the podcast. Exactly. Text Tribune porn. Podcast : Chet Edwards porn.
And Chet Edwards? Ask today.
Do I lie?
That's right.
So are you going to predict that race?
No, I was going to ask you what your predictions were.
That's chicken. I actually, you know, this is going to look really stupid on Tuesday. I think the congressman in most trouble in Texas right now is Ciro Rodriguez.
Oh, I don't think that's stupid. And, you said that for a long time.
But
it
doesn't mean it's smart. That just means I've said that.
But it might be, though.
Has it been a long time? It probably isn't stupid.
I think if anybody can win the Chet Edwards district, Chet Edwards can win it. It's a very tough district. It's the, you know, we've said this a million times. It's still true. It's the most Republican district in America held by a Democrat. And he's run a pretty good race, and Bill Flores has been on his heels for the last 2 weeks. And I think Edwards may pull that out. Rodriguez, if you watch the money from the National Republicans and to some extent from the National Democrats, this has become a firefight. Rodriguez is running against Kiko Canseco in a district that goes from San Antonio to El Paso. It's a marginal district. It tends to be Democratic, but only just. It's just kind of on the bubble. And if you... And Rodriguez made a mistake. He appeared in front of he got videotaped in a restaurant town hall situation, and somebody asked him a question he didn't like, so he chewed him out. And they've been seeing that ad a lot in that district.
It was kind of his macaca moment.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Well, but you know, the thing that you pointed out, incorrect, is that if I read the papers correctly on this, the National Republicans have pulled money out of or are not putting money into the Flores race.
Right.
But American Crossroads, I think, or the National Republicans, or both,
right,
are putting money into the Canseco race.
National Republican groups are going in after.
Well, of course, Bill Clinton came down on the Democratic side.
For Ciro,
that's right. True.
That's a big deal.
So that's right. your big Ross prediction is that Edwards survives and maybe Ciro's in trouble.
Yeah, on the congressional level. I think Patrick Rose is in trouble. I think that's a very interesting race to watch. I think the Republicans have sort of doubled down on this race. Rose is obviously running like a man who believes...
I can't believe your cell phone isn't already ringing.
Yeah, you know, this is that
Ross,
moment at Jurassic Park when you look in the rearview mirror.
You know what you're going to hear when you hear
T-Rex is bigger, closer than it appears. I think Rose is running like a guy who's seeing that in his rearview mirror.
So you think he knows something?
He spent $700,000 in... television and stuff in the last month. I think he's, you know, you don't do that if you're not in trouble.
Maybe you're just cautious.
Well,
if you love ads as much as I do.
He's a Boy Scout, you know, be prepared, right? Maybe that's what he's doing.
He is prepared, and he's one of the House's best fundraisers, and he's lucky that he had all of this money to spend if he needs it. I mean, if he pulls this out and spent $700,000, everybody's going to say, well, the way to pull these out is to have $700,000. And, you know, I mean, it's a testament to raising a lot of money in defense, you know, sort of in a proactive sense. He raised most of the money before this race.
At least make a big prediction.
Democrats pick up 6 in the House.
Republicans.
That was really big.
Which
Democrats
house?
Lose 6 in the House. Republicans.
Well, if they're spending $700
million. Going to tweet that. You know, I'll see Mikoviak's Chet Edwards porn and rage.
You wanted a surprise. No.
you gave us one.
Right.
That was totally planned. No, Republicans pick up 6 in the House.
Net 6 or pick
net
up
6?
Your number's 84.
Yes.
Mine's 82.
No, you're counting the Farabee loss or you're not counting the Farabee loss?
Already counting the Farabee loss.
Farabee, you've already
gone.
On top of that,
I say 6
more.
Net.
So your number is 84. Your number is 82?
Right, 82 or 83.
Yeah. Evan?
I'm probably more with Ross than Elise. I think that the difference between 82 and 83 and 84 and 85, 86 is significant because I keep going back to the fact that if the Republicans net enough that they get to 84, 85, that number plus the change in where they fall on the ideological spectrum in a couple of races that were already Republican, the switch from Delwyn Jones to Charles Perry, the switch from Brian McCall to Van Taylor, the switch from Tommy Merritt to David Simpson, I think that actually Strauss may be in more of a speaker's race if you get to 84, 85, 86.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in any case, I think the speaker's probably going to have to move a little bit to the right just to hold off Chisholm regardless. My big prediction is that one of the Austin Democrats loses.
Does that include Maldonado?
Are you talking about Neistat?
I'm talking about one of the group of Maldonado, Rose, Howard, and Bolton. I'm going to say that one of them is going to be a casualty of just bad year.
Do you have a specific one in mind?
Well, I've said publicly that I thought that Maldonado was the one who was in the most trouble. I just talked to a lobbyist this morning who said that he believed Maldonado actually is going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And this lobbyist said this. I don't say this and I don't subscribe to this, but a lobbyist said the Republicans in that district are going to have a hard time voting for Gonzalez. in the end that the Victor Carrillo problem is going to roll downhill.
I think sort of her hidden advantage here is she was on the school board, and all those PTA meetings and all of that sort of stuff pays off. You know, Larry's very good at campaigning. He's been involved in campaigns as a consultant for years, but just the grassroots shaking hands, sitting through meetings, I think that pays for her.
Well, so I think that you're going to see one Austin Democrat who was assumed at the beginning of the cycle to be fine. I don't know which one.
That would one of them would have to count towards my six, I assume.
Reef? Vote.
I'm with you guys.
You got no independent prediction?
You got nothing?
You want to be the permanent guest host like Joan Rivers to Johnny Carson, and you want to not make a prediction? You're going to get kicked off the show, buddy.
I think the wave is not as big as anticipated, so I think it'll be more in the lower 80s.
Maybe the Republicans peaked early.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see who's right next week.
Todd doesn't have a prediction.
Todd has no mic, really.
But Todd can insert it anytime he wants.
Who is the silent Marx brother? Was it Zeppo? Who was it?
Right.
He's the Zeppo Marx of the podcast.
Right.
Harpo. Well, he says Harpo silently. He says he mouthed Harpo.
He's going to pull a horn out of his pocket.
On behalf of Evan Ross Reeve, Todd Harpo Wiseman, and myself, thanks for listening.